Hello and welcome to the Gilmore Ball Z bonus episodes, where because of your generous donations to the Gohan and Rory Fund, we watched the Dragon Ball Z movie number 4, Lord Slug. I'm Grant.
I'm Paige.
And this was an interesting one. I guess we can just jump right into it. Paige, why don't you tell the lovely people at home roughly what happened in Lord Slug?
This one was both weird and relatively straightforward. So, this movie starts out as all Dragon Ball movies do, and by that I mean roughly half of them, with some beautiful nature shots. And then it goes to Piccolo trying to get 5 minutes of peace and quiet from the screaming by a waterfall. This doesn't go too well. He's trying to meditate, and Gohan comes because he's taught Icarus the dragon how to dance, and he is very proud. And like many small children who burst in on their parents when their parents are trying to just take a minute for themselves, he has no awareness of what's going on. And so he is just determined to show Piccolo the best thing ever, which is him and Icarus dancing. So he whistles a little jaunty tune and they dance to the thing. It takes forever just to make sure you'll remember it. This is important later. Piccolo does not enjoy this in any way, shape, or form. And to the audience at the beginning, it seems like it's just because, you know, Gohan's bothering him. Gohan's not the world's best dancer. Like, all that stuff that would be reasonable. But we'll come back to that later. What we've got now is that on the Brief compound, Dr. Brief's, Bulma's father, sees that there is a giant object hurtling towards Earth, kind of like a meteor, but it is inhabited, and so they don't want to destroy it, but it will destroy the Earth. So there's a little bit of everyone running around, you know, putting their head between their knees, going under the desk, going in the doorway, trying to, you know, not die. But when it lands, it is of course not a comet, but a spaceship that lands safely nestled on Earth. And we learn that this is the spaceship of Lord Slug, a wandering space alien who goes kind of like Frieza throughout the galaxy, taking over planets by just kind of claiming that they're his. So we get his soldiers coming out. They are starting to try to take over the world. And Gohan tries to put a stop to it. But this is still Gohan in his basic default outfit. So he still has the Dragon Ball on his head. Lord Slug, who is very old and popping pills by the handful. He just has a pill bowl by his throne.
Like some kind of hedonistic trough.
Right.
But instead of like grapes or wine or anything, it's just pills.
Generic
nondescript
pills.
And
they don't seem to be like, this is not a prescription pill addiction. It just seems to be because he's super old. So he sees the Dragon Ball on Gohan's head and decides that he needs to get them. So he goes out and they take the Dragon Ball from Gohan. Gohan puts up a bit of a fight. When Chi-Chi sees that her little boy is being attacked, she's relevant for all of 5 seconds when she takes down a couple of mooks, and Gohan is very impressed. And then she's immediately laid out by a third mook and is irrelevant for the rest of this movie. Where is Goku, you might ask? And the answer is he was the one who was trying to deflect the comet without hurting it when they still thought it was a comet hurtling towards Earth. He and Krillin went up to deflect it, but they were unsuccessful. They were completely knocked out. They were knocked completely unconscious. They're not going to be relevant for a minute. At this point, Lord Slug really wants to get the Dragon Balls. He seems to know what they are. And when he's going in, Bulma's like, "You can't get the Dragon Balls. You don't even have a dragon radar." And he's like, "A what now?" And then uses his powers to read her mind. Lord Slug's power set is unclear, but one of his abilities seems to be reading people's minds and then knocking them out through the power of reading their minds. So he reads Bulma's mind, he finds out about the dragon radar, he sends his minions to get the Dragon Balls within an hour, and they are very motivated to do this because anyone who does things too slowly for him gets murdered. So there's a short little sequence of all of them grabbing the Dragon Balls, he makes a wish to Shenron, and he wishes to be eternally young. Not to be immortal, which you'd think would be, you know, the smart thing to do, but specifically eternally young. And he's suddenly young. He's in his prime. He can do whatever he wants. And what he wants to do right now is take over the Earth. He terraforms it with a giant cloud of black gas that makes the air habitable for them to breathe, for him and his men. Although it apparently doesn't make the atmosphere any worse for Earthlings. They just can breathe whatever this is.
It makes them cold, but it doesn't seem to affect their ability to breathe.
Well, and I wasn't sure if the cold came from the gas or a different terraforming effort that was knocked out at the same time, because they did talk about the Earth being too warm for their liking, and so they do. However, whether it comes from the gas or not, they do cool the Earth down. And so,
yeah, I think the idea is that the gas has blocked out the sun.
Okay, that makes sense. And the Earth is pretty much cold for the rest of this movie. So Goku wakes up on the ice of a tropical island and is very confused. Yajirobe is there with the senzu beans to help him and Krillin wake up. And he's trying to figure out what's going on. Meanwhile, at the same time, like, Gohan's fighting the minions. He gets knocked out. Piccolo tries to save him because that's what Piccolo's job is to do. Piccolo also gets knocked out. Goku goes in for the fight. And just to give an idea of when this movie is set, even though it's a Dragon Ball movie, it can't really be placed on a timeline. This is before Goku's gone Super Saiyan. The thing is that for a while we don't actually see Lord Slug fighting. It's mostly his minions who all look like Toriyama's cast-off designs that he sent into He-Man or Thundercats, and they told him no, so he was like, no, I'm going to put them into my movie now. Once again, I know Toriyama doesn't have a lot of design connection to the movies, but these look way more 80s American cartoony than Dragon Ball usually looks.
A little bit, yeah. Especially Slug's, like, lieutenants or whatever they are.
Yeah, mostly Slug's lieutenants. And they are the ones fighting Gohan and Piccolo. And the first guy, they're able to take down pretty easily. But the second guy has energy-draining abilities from five little minions that pop off of his body. It's real gross. They suck all of Gohan's power. And Gohan and Piccolo are defeated by these minions. So when Goku comes in, there are these minions to fight. And one of them is monologuing. And Goku just completely ignores this minion to go see how his son is doing and tell him he's proud of him. This Goku is so much better than series finale Goku by a long
shot.
It
was interesting in contrast because we're recording this not long after we did the final episode.
It was a huge contrast to that finale, yeah. Watching one then the other is just like, oh, this is good Father Goku, okay, who cares more about his kid and checking in with his kid than he does about fighting. But after he's done that, he does take the opportunity to completely demolish Lord Slug's minions without a second thought. And then it follows some Dragon Ball after here, so I can sum it up pretty quick. He goes in to fight Lord Slug. Lord Slug punches him back. Goku almost goes Super Saiyan. It's like Super Saiyan 0.5, where he's still got a big aura around him and he's still breaking all the glass around him, but his hair doesn't go yellow. So King Kai, who's watching this from outer space and decides to pop in occasionally because sure, why not, says, oh, it's a Super Saiyan. We as the audience know it's not a Super Saiyan, but they didn't know that then. So Goku actually looks like he might have a chance to beat Lord Slug in this super form, but then Lord Slug grows into a giant Namekian. He's apparently a Super Namek, not a Super Namekian, a Super Namek, which is a thing that has never come up before, and it will never come up again, but apparently is a thing, where the first Namekians, some of them were in this special tribe of Super Namekians, who could grow really big and had mind-reading powers, and really it's hard to say what's a Super Namek power and what isn't, because the Namek power set is always unclear in the movies. But one of his powers is growing super, super large, and it makes it very hard for Goku to fight him. Like, previously it seemed like Goku could win, but now he doesn't.
And that was a thing that Piccolo did at one point in the original Dragon Ball.
Okay.
Was growing super big like a Power Rangers villain. So this is not a totally unprecedented Namekian ability.
Okay. And they have a little bit of a song and dance, fun and games of Goku getting utterly demolished by this giant Super Namek Lord Slug. When, like, and just as I was starting to think, like, hey, shouldn't Piccolo be here or doing something? Piccolo wakes up to be here and do something. He remembers earlier in the day, and we find out that the reason he was so annoyed by Gohan's dance was not because of the dancing, which was offensive to the eyes, but more his whistling. If you'll remember, Piccolo has incredibly sensitive hearing. He heard Goku from the moon somehow. If you have a high-pitched frequency, like whistling, that would be incredibly painful. So what he does is, in the Namekian way, he rips off his own ears, because he can grow those back, and he yells to Gohan, who's just waking up, hey, do you remember what you did earlier? I need you to do that right now. And Gohan's groggy, he takes a second, but he eventually remembers that he was whistling, and he can help Mr. Piccolo by whistling. If Namekian hearing is strong, Super Namek hearing is even stronger, because apparently when your eardrums are bigger, you can hear more, which doesn't sound like science, but I'll take it.
That's why elephants know everything. It's because they can hear everything.
What about blue whales?
Well, they're underwater.
Oh, okay. But this is, like, basically paralyzed Lord Slug, so Goku is able to get in a few good shots. After that, it's a pretty generic Goku fight. He takes some energy from Piccolo, so it's like Piccolo was fighting Lord Slug. And then when he thinks that he's finally beaten Lord Slug, and he goes to punch the clouds to make them go away, Lord Slug bursts through the clouds. He's not quite dead, so Goku takes energy from the sun, because apparently Goku is solar-powered and can take energy for a spirit bomb from the sun? Sure.
Sure.
Sure. You know, this sure. Movie's only 50 minutes. Fit in what you can. And he takes that, and he lets loose one final attack against Lord Slug, blows him up, dissipates the clouds, because apparently that was enough to punch them hard, and the day is...
Well, no. He knocks Lord Slug into, like, the orbital satellite that's dispersing the gas.
Oh, okay. So he knocks Lord Slug into the orbital satellite that's dispersing the gas. Then the gas all dissipates. This day is saved. Yay, Goku. Piccolo grows his ears back. Roshi wakes up. He slept through this entire thing, which is really the biggest blessing in a Dragon Ball movie, is when Roshi sleeps through the entire thing.
Yup.
That's Lord Slug.
I gotta say, I enjoyed this one more than I thought I would.
I mean, I go into every Dragon Ball movie expecting it to be the most terrible thing I've ever seen. My bar is low for better than I expected it to be.
The bar for Dragon Ball movies is pretty low, but this is, I think, one of the better ones. Like,
yeah,
you mentioned while we were watching it that just, like, the fights themselves have a physical comedy to them that yep. is entertaining.
Yeah. The spoken comedy doesn't always work, but the physical comedy... Like, just even in the way they choose to have characters move is sometimes really funny.
Yeah, like, there's a bit where Piccolo is fighting one of Slug's lieutenants, and they're, like, one other thing I really liked about this movie is that the fights aren't just in, like, your usual Dragon Ball canyons. Like,
no.
They're fighting in a city, so they're actually, like, fighting with interesting set pieces around them.
Yeah, because a lot of Dragon Ball movies start in cities, but then they leave it and they don't, like, they still go to canyons. But this one, they actually stayed in the city. There was a big fight on Iguana Street.
Yeah, and so it's a bit where, like, Piccolo and this minion are fighting on a rooftop, and Piccolo knocks the guy off the rooftop. And then just, it's hard to explain, but... The way that the guy just, like, stands up and goes, hey, 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 and then walks into the building is just really amusing. Like, there's a...
Well, because, like, it's... Well, the thing is that this lieutenant has wings. Like, he's a little winged demon man. And Piccolo knocks him off the building, and then he kind of, like, shuffles into the building like he's been defeated, and he's sad, and he's too tired to fly anymore.
Yeah, it's hard to explain. It's hard to capture it in words, but just that... That the comic timing of that was really good. And then he, like, crouches inside this like shop or whatever and is like, hoo-hoo, when he comes down to look for me, I'll ambush him. And then just Piccolo just like Dr. Doom dive kicks through the ceiling and lands on top of him.
Yeah.
Like, there was a lot of really good villains going, huh, 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 and then getting punched in the face in this movie.
Well, because there was another time when somebody tries to, like, do a mouth blast at Goku, and then he just deflects it back.
Yeah, like, back directly into the dude's mouth, and then his head explodes.
It's great like, stuff.
It's great stuff. But, like, the fight choreography in general was interesting. They made use of, like, stretchy Namekian limbs. They made use of the environment of it being in a city. Mm-hmm. They like...
All five of the lieutenants had unique skills that actually you remembered, which I can't think of happening since the Ginyu Force.
Yeah, so, like, the fights were actually visually interesting in a way that Dragon Ball movies don't always do.
Yeah.
Well, and which I was
think,
cool.
I think part of that is just this is an earlier movie. A lot of movies are just like, okay, how long is it going to be until Goku goes Super Saiyan? It's usually a little more complicated than that, except in, I forget which movie it is, but there was one of them where it was just like, why is Goku not gone Super Saiyan? Oh, it's because we haven't hit the 45-minute mark yet. There's no other reason.
Yeah, that was a Super Android 13.
Yeah, Super Android 13. Oh, that one was so bad.
That one was really bad. That might be the worst one we've watched.
But this one didn't have the waiting for Goku to turn Super Saiyan mark. He turned that kind of sort of Super Saiyan, but the fights aren't built around let's wait long enough for Goku to go Super Saiyan. And I think that that was a huge benefit for it.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Even just pulling out, like, let's debuff the villain in a way that isn't just hitting them until they're knocked down to, you know, for whistling to make him in pain and so he couldn't focus on the fight. That's something interesting and different. And I feel like when the fights were slightly more of a, like, everyone can play scale, even if Piccolo and Krillin got beat up pretty easily, it was still closer to their power levels. And that made them be more creative. And it's not just Goku and the villain of the week are both super powerful. They're going to punch each other in slightly new ways until the hour is up.
Yeah. Honestly, I kind of feel like this movie didn't need Goku.
Yeah.
Like,
if it had just been a Piccolo and Gohan movie?
Yeah, well, like, if this had been set in the period after Goku dies but before the Saiyans show up, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was somebody, like a visitor has arrived, is going to take over the planet, and it's not the Saiyans. And so Piccolo and Gohan and like Krillin, Tien, Yamcha have to resolve this situation without Goku,
mm-hmm.
I think would have been even more interesting.
Yeah, but if Goku doesn't come on screen, then you don't get paid.
Yeah, I know. But like, and then, yeah, it could have been more of a Piccolo movie, because Piccolo got his due. Piccolo was able to use his understanding of his own biology to attack the enemy, which was really clever.
Mostly.
Mostly.
Yeah, because it was interesting when they did and didn't remember what Piccolo could do. Because, like, they remembered he had super hearing, which was great. There was a moment that I really liked where he jumped up on Giant Lord Slug and said, hey, if your, you know, antenna are as sensitive as mine, this is really gonna hurt, and started yanking on them. But there was a later scene in the movie where he was trying to reach out to Goku to give him his power, and he was just straining to stretch Lord Slug's stretchy arm to get over to Goku, but not stretching his own arm.
Yeah, like, bro, you got stretchy arms. You got stretchy arms, dude.
I just wish that, like, I know they didn't, but I just wanted there to be a list on the wall of Piccolo powers. So if you want him to do something, you check the list.
Mm-hmm.
Clothes beam, yes. Stretchy arm, yes. Regenerating stuff, yes. Mind reading, maybe. Question mark.
But my point was, I agree with what you're saying, that there was a sort of everyone can contribute energy to these earlier arcs that, yeah, after, like, Cell, it just kind of becomes, you know, the Goku and Vegeta hour. And Vegeta is, you know, in tiny print.
I mean, Chi-Chi was relevant for 2 seconds.
For 2 seconds, right? So, this is another one that, like, it was an entertaining movie. I enjoyed myself while I was watching it. It had clever stuff in it. But like many of the Dragon Ball Z movies, it illuminated to me just how much storytelling potential there is in Dragon Ball.
Uh-huh.
Just the stories were told all in the wrong order.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like even some of it is, like, just this movie, I will say, like, just to still qualify to people coming from the Gilmore Girls side, this is not a movie I would watch if I was not watching it for this podcast. It is entertaining for a Dragon Ball movie. It is still not a great movie.
No, I would say that of the ones we've watched for the podcast, it's closer to the top.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still not, it's not one that I would go out of my way to watch again, as opposed to, like, My Hero Academia, which has great movies that I would go out of my way to watch again, especially Heroes Rising. The Dragon Ball Z movies, for the most part, are meh.
Right, but I will say this one still did some things that I liked. I really liked the way they cut down the Dragon Ball retrieval sequence, which they sometimes forget to cut down, where when they were getting all 7 Dragon Balls, all you saw was, like, a short 2 or 3 second snippet of the minion grabbing the Dragon Balls from somewhere different on the planet Earth. Because, I mean, whenever you get Dragon Balls, they have to be from somewhere weird, and one of them has to be from a nest. And then it would intersperse those with just a shot of the Dragon Radar, and more of the balls were in the center of the Dragon Radar, obviously being brought together in one place. And I kind of like that they were just like, you know what? You know what we're doing. Let's just show, let's not tell, let's make it take 10 seconds. And I
there was... Yeah, there was a degree of cinematography at play.
And just visual storytelling and a little bit of elegance. And that's not something I usually say about Dragon Ball films.
Yeah. Yeah, this was clearly early enough that they were still putting some care into the movies.
Mm-hmm. The weird thing, though, is that even though it's a movie that I like better, it's something that I have less to talk about. It's interesting because, like... We are going to be releasing these in a slightly different order than we wrote them. Last night we watched Prodigal Son, which will be our next bonus episode, and we recorded the episode for that with Mike Perna, and that's coming out soon. But I have, like, 5 lines for Prodigal Son, and we talked about it for over an hour. I have a whole page of notes for Lord Slug, and I didn't hate it, but there's not much to talk about.
No, it was a tightly written... It was tightly written. Like, the plot functioned. Yeah, just in terms of the plot functioning and the callbacks working and everything, it is tightly written. It's not, you know, super high quality writing, but it is tight and relatively well executed, but it's also relatively simple. It's a simple story. And there's not a whole lot to it. So, yeah, I feel weird, but there's really not much more to say about this movie. I think the biggest thing we haven't really talked about is the fact that it gives us some interesting Namekian world building that unfortunately, you know, never comes up again because that's how the movies roll.
Yeah.
But, like, I like the idea of there was this clan of Namekians that got banished for abusing this ancient power.
Yeah, the idea is that they got this ancient power and then they thought they were better than everyone else and started trying to take over Namek, and everyone else was like, no, we're gonna get the Dragon Balls, we're gonna banish you and you will live as nomads in the universe.
Yeah, I wish a little bit more had been done with that, because it's literally like as Slug is transforming, then King Kai is like, oh no, Goku, this is a Super Namek, and, like, just tells Goku the whole story.
Yeah.
So, like, all of the interesting backstory and world building is in, like, a 30-second King Kai exposition dump.
Yeah, and not even, like, told to him by Namekians. This is told to him by King Kai.
Yeah, I feel like between this and Return of Cooler, we had, like, some interesting look at Namek that didn't quite come together right and was organized a little bit wrong. But, like, I want to... It goes back to, we've been saying it most of this podcast. I want to know more about Namekians. Namekians are cool.
Namekians are cool. Namekians are one of the more interesting features. Like, if I could get more about Namekians and androids, I'd be happy. And
yeah,
Namekians,
like,
have their own culture, so they're not just one guy in a lab building stuff, so that'd be harder to make interesting.
Yeah, like, Namekians have their own entire culture and history, and there's clearly stuff there that we've just never dug into, and it's really, really frustrating. I know that I still haven't read the super manga, but I know that the super manga goes back to Namek.
Uh-huh.
I don't, or to New Namek, rather. I don't know how much it actually digs into Namekian culture, but I want that. Like, I want, I want Namekian culture stuff. I want more about Namek. I want more Namekians. I want everything. Well, I want a spinoff. I just want a spinoff all about Namek.
I even just want more about Lord Slug, because, like, he talks about how he's been taking over all these planets. Like, where are they? Because by the time we got Frieza, he seemed like a big deal who was taking over planets everywhere. And even though they didn't show us much, it was completely believable. But then they're just like, we got Frieza too! And I'm like, okay. He just lands on planets and says they're his. Okay.
Well, and he specifically says he's going to exterminate all life on Earth and then turn it into their next vessel.
Right.
So I think the idea is he takes over a planet, terraforms it, uses it as his spacefaring vessel, and then when it has been strip mined to the point where he can't use it as a vessel anymore, he steers it and crash lands it into another planet, takes over that planet, and starts the process anew.
Right, but that asks so many more questions. How do you turn the Earth into a spaceship? I want to know.
What I want, Cloud, is to sail the darkness of the cosmos with this planet as my vessel. Just as my mother did long ago.
It begs more questions, and it could be better spelled out, but that was the vibe I got, so he's not quite the same as Frieza.
That makes sense, and that kind of jibes with what they were saying, but it didn't quite process in my brain because it makes zero sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm going to take this entire planet, terraform it with a full army, and then use it as my spaceship somehow. It's like, that seems like a lot of effort, sir.
Yeah, but that's their story, and they're sticking to it.
Do you have anything else?
I really don't, so I guess we can play it out from here. Thank you for listening, and thank you for donating. As we have mentioned, these episodes are possible because of your donations to the Gohan and Rory Fund, which is a matching program that we run where you give money to charity and we match it. So if you enjoyed this, go to our website, gilmore-ball-z.pinecast.co, go to the Gohan and Rory Fund link, and there you can see everything we funded so far, what our current goals are, and instructions on how to donate. We're in a little bit of a weird in-between space right now where we're recording these in the run-up to the end of our show because we're running out of content. So, honestly, we're not totally sure if there will still be new stretch goals up. That's something that we'll be discussing and we'll have more to say at a later date. But either way, if you just want to give out of the goodness of your heart, we will still match your donation. So you go, you donate to one of the charities on that website, and then you send a confirmation receipt to us at gilmoreballz@gmail.com with any personal information blacked out if you want. And then we will match your donation and we will add it to the fund.
Yep.
So next up, we have Prodigal Son, the Fox crime procedural starring Keiko Ajina, who plays Lane on Gilmore Girls. And then after that, we're going to do another DBZ movie.
That makes it sound like she's the detective, and I want that.
We're going to do another DBZ movie, and then we are going to do Dirty Dancing, which the classic movie, which also has Kelly Bishop, who played Emily Gilmore. And those are our current slate of bonus episodes that are going to carry us through to the end of the series. So with that, thank you for listening, and we will see you another time for our regularly scheduled programming.